Hello, my name is Melissa Hildebrand Reed. I'm with Hildebrand Farms Dairy and MHR Horses, and today we're going to be visiting about how to build a successful farm-to-market business. So just to share a little bit about my farm, just kind of a brief overview, we dairy farm west of Junction City, Kansas, milking only about 150 cows, but selling all of that milk through different various markets throughout the state of Kansas. So I'm partnered with large grocery stores such as Kroger, Hy-Vee, Whole Foods, and then I also have several mom and pop grocery stores that we work with. We've set up farm stands, done farmers markets. We have our own retail store on our farm, and we even connect and partner with several distributors. So in the world of markets, I have a good variety that I work with. Now, our core product is, of course, fluid milk, and we package in glass bottles, but we do sell our beef. And I'm going to be focused a little bit more on that product for you here today. But our beef, we sell by the quarter, half, whole, and also by the piece, primarily through our farm store. But that market has definitely changed, especially with COVID. And so I'll be diving in a little deeper into what we do on the beef side. But I also have a really exciting background in teaching courses. So not my first course. I'm really happy to share with you some of that information. Today is gonna be just a little bit of a brief overview. So we're gonna be kind of rolling through some of the heavy hitting points fast and furious. I would love to share more of my information and more of my 13 years of experience with you. You're welcome to pop over to Facebook and find me at MHR Courses, or you can check out my website, mhrcourses.com/podia, P-O-D-I-A. Now, I will tell you, I'm a mom of three beautiful kids. I'm not a farm wife. My husband actually works at an appliance store. I'm a dairyman. I'm a manufacturer. A website developer, I am not. So if you have issues checking out my website, shoot me a message. I'm hoping I can get things worked out. But there's some areas in the world that you just need to call in some reinforcement. When it comes to websites, for me, that's the area. So I've got a lot to talk about today, though, because when it comes to building a farm-to-market business, we've been at it now for 13 years, and there's a lot that I've learned. I've made a lot of mistakes and learned a few things the hard way, but I would love to make things a little easier for you. Now, today I'm gonna break things down into five easy steps. I say easy because they're easy to talk about. They're not always so easy to do. So we'll kind of break those out, talk a little bit more, dive into those. If you have questions, though, feel free to reach out to me. Email is probably the best form, but I do want to encourage you to check me out on Facebook at that MHR Courses, and we can talk a little bit more and engage a little bit more there. So as I mentioned, there's five steps that we're going to be talking about today in relation to how to build a successful farm-to-market business. Now, those five steps that I've outlined first start off with discern, competitive analysis, determine direction, funding, and execute. So those are the five steps that we're going to be visiting about. I'm going to spend most of my time visiting with you about step two and three. I think that most people that are actually tuned in, excuse me, by nature of just watching this presentation, you're already in step one. So you are already in that first step that I'm going to talk about, which is the discerning step. So discern is where maybe the dream's there, the curiosity is there, there's hope or there's want, but maybe at this first step, there hasn't been a whole lot of action. And that's okay because you need to flesh out your dream. You need to flesh out the desire and really kind of determine internally if this is something that you want to spend some time really developing. And so before you go too far, go too deep, I definitely encourage you to take 20, 30 minutes. That's right. We're just not a whole whole day, not a whole week. It can just be minutes, but minutes of silence, which is really tough. As a mom of three, I can tell you, asking for 20 to 30 minutes of silence is not always easy. But take that time to really sit down and flush your thoughts out on paper. I actually have a method I use that I share within my course that goes in, and I go into a little bit more detail there about how I really hone in on these thoughts and break that out in a very systematic way. And I do this pretty regularly, but essentially it's creating that time for the creativity to come to you and also the time to organize your thoughts. Just a little bit of time goes a long way. So as we're discerning, one of those first things I'm going to ask you to do, if you're able, go ahead and pause this presentation. And I want you to just try and spend 5 to 10 minutes, short amount of time, thinking through, and put pen to paper if you can. If you're on a tractor, stay on the tractor. I mean, let's multitask here, right? But try and really mentally process some of the fears or apprehensions or things that have prevented you from going forward. Because what often happens as we discern is that we get nervous, we get fearful, and then we get entrepreneurial paralysis. We just stop. We get one obstacle that pops in our brain, and that obstacle is the easy break versus the accelerator where you had maybe 20, 30 like great positive ideas. It usually only takes one to put a stop and throw you into entrepreneurial paralysis. So as we talk about this discern stage, let's really focus on how we can overcome that entrepreneurial paralysis and how we can break down our 30 positives or our different positive statements and learn how to kind of move forward and to eliminate the breaks that that one negative thought can put on us. So that's going to lead into our next step, which is competitive analysis. I think this is one of the most critical stages that is often quickly overlooked, or it's done later in the game. And I think that that's why, to me, it's a very easy step too. So when we have entrepreneurial paralysis, oftentimes we don't know where to start. We don't know where to go. And we're so honed in and focused on the one negative or maybe the one bad feedback that we don't do. So let's get beyond that. Let's break some stuff down into some super simple steps that you can do today, tomorrow, this weekend, anytime. And it's not going to take too much fear, push you out of your comfort zone too much too soon. So the first thing I like or encourage my visitors to do is a competitive analysis where they are going to walk into a grocery store, farmer's market, or even from the comfort of your own home, search some Facebook pages for, you know, what products are being sold on buy, sell, trace sites, or, you know, what are some local potentially door-to-door options? What is going on in your market? So when you are checking these markets, take a visitor's or a consumer's perception, take a different view, and ask yourself a few questions. Through my course, I actually have a form that I provide to my customers to really make sure that they go in and they're not forgetting different aspects. Because I personally have done this. I've gone in looking to evaluate a competitor, and I focus so much on price that I forgot about, you know, products and what they were missing. Or, you know, I missed some aspects and had to turn around and go back 2 days later. So oftentimes I take paper with me and I consciously map out these thoughts because I want to make sure I don't miss something in the moment. So for example, if I am a cattleman interested in selling beef, I would walk into my local grocery store, first start with something that's not a franchise. Franchises are very realistic to get into. It's a very different game. And not one that I really recommend for somebody that's just breaking into a farm-to-market business. The value is there. I have partnered with extremely large, actually the second largest retailer in the country, and I am very valuable and grateful for that partnership. Do I suggest starting with that? No, and nor did we. So we were a good year to 2 years into business before that partnership really developed, and another 5 years before it really bloomed. So I do suggest honing in on your local markets first, to really make sure that you can start small with the people that are going to know you the best. So as you look at those local markets, the things that I think that are extremely important to ask yourself. One, what are the local options here? What do we even have? Do they have a local option for beef? Okay, if so, number two, what's the cost? What's it look like? Now, you're typically going to see anywhere from a 30 to 40% retail markup. So just because that piece is being sold for $7.99 doesn't mean that the rancher slash farmer is receiving $7.99. Actually, I guarantee that it doesn't. It's far less because of the retail markup. Now, retail markup can really vary depending on the product. So as a dairyman, I have taken a lot of steps to control my retail, and there are ways to do that. And I do that by being very involved in the ordering process and delivery. The more I can take off of the grocery store's plate and put onto my plate, the lower that margin will be. Now, if I'm putting all of that onto my retailer, my margin can go all the way up to, I kid you not, 100%. So there are several items in the dairy cooler, as well as especially produce where there's a lot of loss, that they will take your cost and increase by a full 100%. So almost double what you're making is what they'll sell to the consumer. So when you're looking at evaluating these prices, please keep that in mind. That is not cash money in your pocket. However, it's also really important and to consider that there's still a lot of opportunity there. So what I also look at when I'm evaluating, let's use a grocery store for example. I'm saying, what's here? What's the price look like? But I also want to ask the question, what are they missing? Are there some specialty cuts that they don't offer at all? Is there something in the cooler that is absent? Or is there something the current meat producer is not providing well? Sometimes that could be a family connection. Sometimes that can be as simple as beautiful, important packaging that is appealing to the customer. It doesn't always have to be the product inside the package. So there's more that comes to that, and that's something that we dive really deep into when we talk about marketing. But to kind of go surface level, those are the questions you want to be asking when in the store. Now, another little trick that I like to share is if you want to get an idea of what type of volume you would possibly move, I look at how many people are in the grocery store working the store itself. Not necessarily customers, because customers can really fluctuate based on time of day as well as time of week. What I look at is how many checkout lanes are open. Okay? How many people are stocking the shelves? If you're in a store that has one lane open and you're only seeing maybe one other person stocking the shelf, you are in a low volume store. And so you have to have realistic expectations with a low volume store. You will not move a quarter of beef in a low volume store within a month. I mean, it might take a hot minute, especially based on price. So, but if you can find those high volume stores that are local, and that's multiple checkouts, that's multiple people in the store, employees equal sales. Okay? So just a real basic, general surface thought when you're trying to gauge a store, the number of employees they have there is very much telling of the amount of sales that store receives. So keep that in mind. that those smaller stores are not going to be the bread and butter for you, but they are a great way to start and learn. And that's what you want, right? You want to figure out the mistakes, figure out the logistics, figure out all the hard stuff, and you don't want to burn any massively large bridges early on. So I suggest starting small. I suggest starting at those local mom and pops if you can, even if maybe they aren't going to have the volume that will sustain you for the long run. So competitive analysis is huge. Now, when I talk about competitive analysis, of course that means your competitors, right? Now, I think many of us can say, somebody's already here, somebody's already doing it, there's no room for me. And I have to say that's a hard no, and that there can be a full marketplace at times, but when there is a competitor, I think you need to change your mindset and tell yourself that means there's a market here. If somebody is doing this, and if someone is doing it well, and it looks as though their business is succeeding, it's probably because there is a demand, and that demand they are fulfilling. Now, just because one business is fulfilling a demand doesn't mean another one can't get a seat at the table. I will tell you, when we started our glass bottle business in 2008, several of the grocery stores I'm in now had a different glass bottle dairy provider. We had no intention at the time of going into his market, but we learned to hone in on a few things that we could do really well, such as customer service, dependability with the product, solid product ordering, and pretty quickly, actually within about 3 years, his customers were calling, begging for our product. And so, by just kind of seeing what was missing, what they weren't doing well, and by honing in and really perfecting those areas, we are now in over 120 retail locations throughout the state. Probably 65 of those to 75 of those are within markets that had already had a competitor in it when we first launched. So just because there's somebody doing what you're doing does not mean there's not room for you. There's always room for someone who is innovative, thinks maybe a little outside the box, and also can provide incredible customer service, because that customer service is absolutely huge. I touch on customer service quite a bit in my course, in my MHR courses. My first course is at 7-Day Decision, and I don't dive as deep into customer service there. It's far more deeper breakdown of kind of what we're talking about today. But customer service is absolutely, absolutely critical. So, kind of diving in a little bit more to the competitive analysis. Once you kind of have looked in the grocery store or potentially a farmer's market, I then encourage you to get online and really do some local research. So, I had mentioned earlier, like buy sell trade sites. Oftentimes, you can find meat for sale on those buy sell trade sites. And I encourage you to kind of see what's being sold locally and how well they're marketing their farm. Are they talking about their family? Are they talking about their sustainability efforts? Is there a conversation or a website? What exactly is their messaging, and can you even find that? And then how easy do they make it for their customers to order, access the product, create packages, bundles? How can the customer get exactly what they want when they want it? So all of that is extremely important to kind of evaluate from your customer base to really determine your path forward and how you're interested in potentially moving forward with your own farm to market avenue. Now, once you've done kind of the research, at this point, you probably have a really good inclination of what you're interested in and maybe what to do or what not to do. And that's why that research needs to start at the beginning and not 2, 3 years in. But I will tell you, the next stage of that is to then start having conversations. So this is where by no means are you talking to banks yet. That's not where I'm going with the conversations. I'm talking about building a market. So before we create any infrastructure whatsoever, we have to create a market or find that interest for a market. And so as we start having conversations, I encourage a second trip back to the grocery store where you can talk to, you know, someone in the grocery department and just quiz them a little bit. Now, in working with grocery stores, I can tell you, calling and setting up a meeting is fruitless. You ain't gonna get anywhere. Just walk in. They're too busy. They're not behind a computer. They're not behind a desk. They're behind the aisles. They're stocking product. And this goes for assistant managers, even good store managers. They are busy working nonstop. And the easiest way to really catch a portion of their day is to come as a customer off the street, go to customer service, say that you'd be interested in talking to someone behind the meat counter, grocery department, a store manager. I'll let you kind of determine that based on the store. But ask them if you could just have 5 minutes of their time to kind of pick their brain. And let them know. Say, I'm a farmer. I'm interested in potentially creating a farm-to-market business. I've kind of looked at your store in the past and thought that there might be a niche in XYZ area. Have you worked with local producers in the past? Or are you interested? Some will have some horror stories to tell. Of producers that did not take care of them consistently or didn't follow through with delivery in a timely manner, you will hear the negative and the good all together. So really hone in and listen. Use it as a listening opportunity, but also make sure that you kind of say, you know, is there opportunity here if those issues were fixed? If we really honed in on this, would you be interested in partnering? And by no means do you need a definitive, sure, I'm ready to order tomorrow. I don't think that you need to go that far at all. We're not there yet. We're just making sure that if you're interested in creating a market, that market is somewhat established. Now let's completely flip the script here. Let's say that we aren't interested in retail at all. We don't want to mess with farmers markets, and we really want to hone in on the end consumer, and that you're thinking more of a direct mail through online avenue. This is where I really encourage putting feelers out on some of your local buy-sell trade areas, talking to your local community, your friends, your family. This is where you really like put the idea out there and try and engage in feedback. Now, be prepared. Your friends and family are going to be nice. They are. I mean, most. I mean, we all have those family members that aren't nice, but you know who they are, and they're going to be negative no matter what. But for the most part, family and friends will be nice, as well as a stranger off the street. So you have to keep that in mind. You're creating business connections, but by no means will they tell you the truth when looking at them face to face. I highly encourage surveys. SurveyMonkey is a really good one that you can do for little to, you know, $0, even depending on the number that you send out. And if you can send that where people have a chance to be anonymous, it gives you a better pulse on what consumers are looking for. And so it could be as simple as setting up a quick farmer's market booth. You can set up a farmer's market booth for about $20, collect emails, or even just have people fill out a survey of interest at the farmer's market so that you can get an idea of what's the need, what's the interest. And I think a really important aspect of that is, are you willing to pay a little bit more? Because you will not be able to sell beef for the $1.99 discounts that sometimes they throw in the grocery store. So where you can't win on price, you can win on being local by being grass-fed or even for some grain-finished. You can win by having specialty cuts or sharing your sustainability efforts. You can win in so many different ways beyond price. But you need to flush that idea out with your customer as well to make sure that there's an interest and what you have and what you're in your area. So I highly suggest doing kind of what I would call a listening tour. I group this all under the competitive analysis point, but it's really where you're evaluating your competition, but you're just creating the market. You're really diving deep into finding your ideal market. Now for us, I had talked about how we're in grocery stores. We also have a retail store here, and that retail store gives us a competitive edge and that I can connect directly with my consumer on a daily basis. So we're open 5 days a week here, and I can create surveys and talk to them and really get a strong pulse because of that retail location. And that is where I move most of our beef. So we sell beef by the piece in a freezer here. It's a glass door freezer so people can see the product inside. Our beef is paper packaged. We're interested in the CryoVac. It just isn't available locally here, at least not extremely close. But for us, we actually move more through our quarters, our halves, our wholes. So we have a very strong demand, one that's just exponentially blown up with the pandemic, for beef in a larger volume, which we appreciate because it's a lot less handling, and gives us consistent movement in our cattle, and that we're able to get them moved through a little faster. So I'll dive a little deeper into that later on. But I want to kind of go back to the competitive analysis and make sure that you understand the importance of walking into those stores, really having some deep conversations, and asking the right questions. So you want to know about, you know, what are the local options out there? What are the costs associated with those local options? What is missing? And then from there, that's where we're going to determine our direction. So we're going to jump into our third step, determine direction, where we really flesh out a lot of our ideas and we take all the things we've learned through that competitive analysis and we put it into practice. We put it into writing and we really hone in on where our heart's at as an entrepreneur. So hold tight. Next step is determining direction. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. So I call these the 5-in-1, right? So you got 5 W's, 1 H. So if I reference the 5-in-1, I'm talking about the who, what, when, where, why, and how. Now, my background, I went to Kansas State University. I majored in ad communications and journalism. And my focus in journalism was diving in and fleshing out the who, what, when, where, why, and how. So the 5-in-1 is something that I use all the time when planning new projects or thinking through new ventures that I'm looking at doing for my business. Because it's very easy to think through the processing side or the logistical side, but rarely do I then dive even further, and oftentimes I'll miss some of the aspects of the where or the why. The mission, the vision behind it. So I'm going to break down each of those, and essentially what we're doing in this step is creating our business plan. We are fleshing out the ideas that we need in our business to move forward. So as we talk about the 5-in-1, just know that all of this is going to come back and we're going to use this as we create a business plan, which also ties into funding, which also ties into execution, and it really is important that from the beginning, we create and map out a plan. So let's first start with the first W in the 5-in-1, which is who. And of course, that might seem obvious to you, right? You're the one thinking about this, you're the one dreaming of it, so it'd be you, right? Easy, it's me, I'll do it. Okay, well, let's put a different thought and a different twist to this, because you have to determine, are you going to be the one delivering the product to the end consumer? Or is the delivery going to be via mail and you're taking those packages to the mailbox? Who's picking that product up from the packer, the processor? Who's taking the cattle? Who's doing the marketing and the Facebook and the social? who's doing the customer service aspects. And as we talk about this, you have to tie this with time. Who has the time? So it's one of those that I will admit that come January, February, I think of some really awesome business ideas. And I get pretty far into those. And we have, most of our projects have always been launched in January, February. For whatever reason, things are slow in the field. I have time. And so I know that. And I oftentimes will put new product development, new initiatives into the month of January, February. However, I also know that as soon as summer rolls around, I am out. My job is capped. I can only work a 60-hour to 65-hour week because I'm a mom of three. I got to put supper on the table. I got to tuck kids in bed, and I need to be there for them too. So I have to have a realistic time frame. So as you're thinking of the who, you really want to put all of that into perspective. And one aspect I missed on that, let me go back a second, is finances. So who's going to help you with the financial aspect and the invoicing and the billing, in addition to the customer service? So all of that needs to be done, and is all different aspects of the business. That can be a lot for one person. And so as you look at creating this business, it's important to think in terms of, okay, maybe it does start out with me, but then how can this scale where I can bring people on to help me, and what aspects would I be willing to scale? So, or what aspects could I get some assistance on? And so think through not just the first phase, but to potential growth opportunities there and how you can pull people in to help you. And whether those be family, friends, or outside employees. Out of the three, I work with a lot of family. That's a whole nother course, right? Like, that's a whole nother like series of 10 courses if you want me to really dive into how to survive working with, for us, there's 7 family member on the farm, how you can kind of move through that and working with family. Because it's not always easy. Rarely is it easy, actually. But there's so much blessing to working with family. And I wouldn't change it. I'm very grateful to work with my family. But in planning this business, you want to think through who you're going to be working with and whose role is really going to depend on who. Because those roles need to be determined by everyone, not just one person. So as you're watching this and as you take kind of leadership in the idea of maybe a farm-to-market business, you really want to define and hone in on those different roles of who. And make sure and flesh that out before you go too far. Because there's nothing like being disappointed thinking somebody's got something when they're saying, I don't got time for that. Like, it ain't me, right? So, because then guess what? It's going to be you. So let's make sure that we do our best to try and flesh that out early and ahead of time. And this is the time to do it, in the beginning, to make sure you really determine people's commitment and their interest level in creating this business. So going beyond the who, the what. Now, what should be easy, right? Like, you're growing it, you're producing it, you're making it, it's your product. But that what can also be a big part of your niche. And maybe you want to do a specialty cut or a specialty product or have specialty packaging. Your niche can oftentimes be found in the what, which is your packet, your product, your it. You know, for us, our it was fluid milk. Well, guess what? You can go into any grocery store in the entire United States and find fluid milk, okay? Ain't special. I ain't doing anything that a lot of other dairymen aren't doing, but I am putting it in a glass bottle. I'm focused on quality, and I am also making sure that our whole milk is not standardized, meaning it's got a higher butterfat content, and that I take exceptional care of my cows. People can come and visit me on the farm, and that when they get that glass bottle of milk, they know exactly where it's coming from. So yes, I am a dairy farmer selling milk, and you're a beef producer selling beef, potentially. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a niche or added value to that product. So hone in on that what, kind of think through that what, and really tie the what part of the five in one. So the what is your niche? Like that, and I highly suggest having multiple niches. So for us, the glass bottle is definitely a niche. I also create a root beer flavored milk. Now, my root beer flavored milk, it's like a root beer float. It is not my best seller, but I have a cult following that when I go places, they will say like, "Oh, you're the root beer milk lady," or, "Oh, Hildebrand, their milk is so good. Did I hear that you have a root beer milk?" It's a conversation starter. If I'm sitting and sampling in a grocery store, I'll say, "Hey, are you interested in sampling some whole milk chocolate root beer milk?" And they'll put the brakes on, turn, and say, "What?" You know? So it's a fun product that really gives us a marketing edge, and one that is kind of a signature for us. Again, it's not my best seller. Whole milk is my best seller by far. I sell almost 2 bottles of whole milk to all of my other products combined. But that root beer has created more conversation and more marketing opportunity than the whole milk ever has. So don't think for a second that you can't sell ground beef, but also have something that can kind of be fun on the side, even if it isn't your blow away bestseller. It's for marketing purposes, right? Now, to kind of spin off of that, let's talk a little bit about the when. And the when goes back to that time piece that we talked about under the who, but it also needs to map out the logistics of creating and moving the product. Now, for us, we process on the farm. So the when for us is as soon as that cow is milked, the milk is moved over to our on-site processing facility. It's tested for antibiotics. That milk is processed. It's then put in a cooler, loaded up on, I have 12 routes that I'm delivering on various days, and it goes onto those routes. And so I've logistically changed that all the time and trying to determine the best days to get milk to the grocery store at the freshest opportunity. But that when is really important because it really maps out the logistics of getting, sorry about that, the logistics of getting the product from you to the consumer. So you want to create an entire map through that process. Now, kind of spinning off of that will be the where. Now, the where is definitely important, especially for a farm family that oftentimes is on the farm, right? And so committing to putting, say, a store on your farm or having consumers come out to your farm can be a little scary. And so it might be that you're interested in a different location or a retail location, or maybe you want farmers markets to be your primary source of connection. I know several people that have had great success with farm stands. And actually, during the pandemic, in May of the pandemic, people were showing a lot of interest in our product about an hour west of us, or excuse me, east of us in Lawrence. We have 7 grocery stores out there.